Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the NBL Pocket Podcast. Joseph Kaur here from Stats Before Media and other outlets. On this episode, Andrew Canyon and I are joined by none other than Nick Elam, inventor of the Elam ending. We love this concept. For those new to it, essentially, the Elam ending is a process to end basketball games without a clock and therefore eliminate late game fouling and free throws that just go on and on and on. What happens is, at the last stoppage within 4 minutes of play, the time clock is cast away. 8 points is added to the team with the lead, and that becomes the target score for both teams. Fouling becomes discouraged, and it becomes all about nutting up or shutting up. It's no longer playing against the clock, you're playing against your opposition and the hoop. Every game ends on a buzzer beater. Did we all enjoy Tom Abercrombie's game winner the other night against Cairns? Well, that could be the norm every night. Imagine this. The score is tied at 80 apiece. Perth Wildcats, Sydney Kings, a replay of the finals. The target has been 83. The score is at 80. Bryce Cotton has the ball. The shot clock is still in effect and it clicks down. Cotton rocks the cradle. He fires the three. Casper Ware rises up to contest, but he's a fraction late. Perth are taking a huge risk with this long ball strategy. They could have taken the two. But no, they've pushed it for the three and the win. The ball takes a user-friendly roll and goes down. John Casey goes wild. The camera shakes as the crowd erupts. Jeremy Lowliger, GM at NBL, he's in the front row, weeping, blubbering like a baby, begging for buttermilk at the basketball bliss that has played out in front of him. Larry Kesselman and Andrew Bogut, they're in the row just behind. They're holding one another. They've put their petty squabbles to one side for this one shining moment. And from that day forward, every time, Larry Kesselman, Andrew Bogut, and indeed everyone in the crowd hears the wind blow, it echoes the name, Elam. The Elam ending. For those who may not know, a bit of a square question, but what is it and why did you create it? Why did you create it, Nick?
Sure. So I'm a lifelong basketball fan. And so it was always disheartening to me that so often the style and the quality of play becomes so warped late in the game, where you see the leading team start to play very passively and stall. The trailing team, when they're on defense, they have to resort to fouling and handing away free points at the free throw line. When they're on offense, they have to rush and force up ugly shots. That whole combination of factors makes the outcome of the game very predictable. It makes late comebacks unlikely. And what you get are many big games and good games throughout basketball history that just kind of fade out with a whimper. And so the idea of the Elam ending in a nutshell is not meant to change the game. It's meant to do the opposite, to preserve a more natural style of play through the end of every game. And under the Elam ending, you play most of the game with a game clock and you play the last part of the game without a game clock. And what it's meant to do is without having that clock at the end of the game and having to play to a target score, if you have the lead, you can't stall. You have to continue playing assertively to get to that target score. If you're trailing, when you're on defense, you can rely on quality stops. You don't have to hand away free points at the foul line. When you're on offense, you don't have to rush. You can still get your best look. That whole combination of factors makes the outcome of the game less predictable. It makes late comebacks more likely. And every game ends with the swish of a net, so you get more memorable game-ending moments.
Perfect. Before I throw you over to Andrew for his question, I just want to ask, have you had any association with the NBL or Australian leagues to this point?
I know that around 2016, that was the summer of 2016 when I was making just another round of outreach to different parts of the basketball world. You know, I had done this just off and on over the years, going back to 2007. And this time around, my audience was going to be different international leagues and then also different semi-pro leagues and events throughout the United States. Now, it's harder to find good contact information for international leagues than I had thought. So I honestly can't tell you for sure if I was able to get in touch with Australian leagues, but I'm sure that I tried. I was having limited success on finding good contact info for leagues and for individuals. Now, within the United States, I ran into a little bit of the same thing, but one league or one event that did embrace the idea was TBT, the basketball tournament, which is a winner-take-all high-stakes tournament broadcast on ESPN in the summer here in the Northern Hemisphere. And So once they showed interest, then I really started moving forward with them. But I mean, I would love to see it implemented in Australia. I'd love to see it implemented anywhere. The one thing I heard recently that was really exciting to me was a pretty high level women's tournament in Australia. I think it was the Shelley Gorman Invitational.
Yes.
Within just the last couple months in Australia that implemented the Elam ending. And I was able to watch some of the clips on YouTube. So that was really exciting to see.
Yeah, Nick, it's interesting. We do a regular NBL podcast. That's our focus is the NBL. The fact that you weren't able to reach out in 2016 is probably fine because the Australian League has undergone significant change since then. So perhaps ownership changes and structural changes may mean it's a more better ground at the moment. But we actually first became aware.
I mean, again, like I said, I want it to be implemented in Australia and NBA, NBL or wherever. So maybe we can work together on making that happen.
Well, we've been trying. We really sort of came across the Elam ending in its entirety last year at the TBT. We did a daily podcast as we reviewed that tournament. And we loved the way that it changed the game. It made every game exciting. It was a fantastic innovation to the game. And from that moment forward, we've been big boosters of the Elam ending. I think what we seem to notice is there's perhaps, however, some concept that it's just a novelty event. So what I was going to ask you is how do you move it from being this sort of novelty idea to something that is a genuine standard that's respected and seen as part of the game?
Sure. So one thing that is really heartening to me is just now, again, it's been less than 4 years that this idea has come to life. But the now that the idea has had a chance to speak for itself, it can speak for itself much better than I could speak on its behalf. Now people are seeing and hearing, feeling, experiencing all this vision that I had for that first 10 years of this process where, you know, I couldn't, I was only playing these games out in my mind and on paper. And now we're seeing, people are seeing the spirit of the idea. They are seeing that it's not meant to change basketball, that it's meant to preserve a more natural style of play. So I've learned to be patient with it certainly over this time. And, I think thinking about international play, at least international from the perspective of from the United States, it was exciting to me in 2020 to see Elam ending implemented in a FIBA league for the first time, that being the Canadian Elite Basketball League. And so they were, they had a modified kind of a tournament style league last year, or season, I should say. It was more of a round robin tournament rather than a full length season, but they implemented the Elam ending, and from all indications, they're very happy with that implementation. And then when they do return to a full season format, I do expect them to implement the Elam ending. So that'll be really the first good test of the Elam ending in a full length season in a high level professional league. And again, it'll have that chance to prove itself. If it can't prove itself, then it doesn't deserve to move forward beyond that. But I'm confident that all the benefits that we've seen in some of these shorter events, I'm confident that it'll bring those same benefits to a full length season.
I totally agree. This is Joseph again. I totally agree because when I first saw it, I just fell in love with it. I don't know if that makes me progressive or not, but I think it should just be rolled out everywhere. My question to you, Nick, is this is an invention, which makes you an inventor. Where do you see yourself on the scale of inventor? Like you've got, so like a Bill James who wrote Moneyball, like he was a mathematician who changed things. Then you have like a Doc Brown from the movie Back to the Future who was an inventor by chance. He was hanging a clock, he hit his head, he came up with time travel. And then you've got kind of like a John DeLorean type who was a risk taker. Where do you see yourself on that scale of inventor, if that makes sense, Nick?
Great.
Did the idea, did it come to you over time slowly mathematically, or was it just a burst of brilliance?
So we'll keep it in the realm of basketball. So you've got James Naismith, and then if you take about 1%, if that, of whatever James Naismith's contribution was to the sport, then there's little old me. But you know, you asked kind of how the idea came to me. Mm-hmm. It was, I mean, I remember the day. It was March 10th, 2007. I was watching a college basketball game in America, and it was a game like many I'd seen before, where just this really intense, highly competitive game gets to the final stretch, and all the life just goes out of the arena, and a fairly slim deficit just seems impossible to overcome. And it was just this crawl to the finish. And that's when it hit me that, you know, all these different phenomena that we see late in basketball games is attributable to the clock. And so if you just got rid of these, if you just got rid of the clock at the end of the game, would it address those issues? So that's when I first started to explore the idea. Now, even then I thought, okay, there must be something I'm overlooking here, some fatal flaw why this wouldn't work. So really, I was trying to punch holes in it just because, out of natural curiosity, to try to figure out why it wouldn't work. But the more that I explored it, the more I really came to believe in it. The more I believed that it was necessary, the more that I believed it was sound, and the more that I had that I thought it had the potential to be very cool. And so as those weeks and months in 2007 went on, and I finally convinced myself that the idea had merit, then the really tough part came of trying to convince others in the basketball world to embrace the idea too. And again, that took 10 years to finally see the idea come to life.
Wow. Yeah. You're almost like the founder in a way. Sorry, Nick, you know that film, have you seen it, where you just got this idea and you're trying to push it through? Andrew, you go.
Yeah. Just on that point, one of the Australian League is aligned with FIBA, as many leagues around the world. Have you had any communication with FIBA? Because so much of, we are governed by their rules ultimately, and what they choose to do, then we follow in Australia and the NBL. Is FIBA been open to this idea at all? Or
yeah, so my main link to FIBA would be through the Canadian Elite Basketball League. You know, now that they've implemented the Elam ending, and now that they've really kept me. And given me a seat at the table in their discussions of making the format as good as it can be for their league. You know, I've developed some connections there through their league. So I would say, I haven't quite built that direct bridge to FIBA yet, but, again, I'm making inroads and hope to continue making those relationships going forward. That's kind of been the theme for all these years, you know, almost 14 full years now. It's just finding some way every day, every week, whatever it might be, trying to move this forward in some way. Certainly establishing a good connection at the top levels of FIBA would be a great way to move it forward.
I wish FIBA would come to you. I think they should get on the front foot and say, Nick, we need to improve our game.
I have a question for you, Nick. Elam ending, do you have a patent over the idea? And if so, how did you go about acquiring that patent or rights to it? And do leagues pay you a percentage to implement your invention?
Great question. So when it comes to intellectual property, there are patents, trademarks, and copyrights. So as far as patents go, this type of a playing format isn't really patentable. Now, the name itself, Elam ending, it is trademarked. And then any sort of writing that I might do about the idea is kind of automatically copyrighted. But as far as the trademark goes, technically, yeah, if any league or event wanted to use the name Elam ending, they would have to get permission. But there's nobody stopping them from getting that permission. I mean, we want them using this idea. In other words, you know, we're not trying to set up any kind of barriers, keeping them from using the name, making it harder for them to implement it or use the name. Like, it's more of a, hey, thanks for asking. Yes, please do use the name, that sort of thing. So, hopefully that answers your question.
So could they then, sorry, Andrew, but could they then go, we're going to use the Elam ending invention, but we're going to call it the crunch time 8 minutes, and then they've cut you out of the idea. Is that possible?
So there's a certain level of protection. It's not full protection. It's probably not as much as I would like for it to be. And that's why, for me, that's why it's really important for me to have the name Elam ending kind of informally ingrained in the basketball vocabulary, because there is to some extent, you could use a different name. You just call it something different. I don't know if you were able to see the broadcast of the NBA All-Star game last year or this year, or I don't know if it was a different broadcast. For us, it's on a station called TNT, Turner Sports. And, on those broadcasts, they don't say the name. They just kind of give it a generic, target score ending kind of the title. I don't know if it's different on any of the international broadcasts of those games, but sometimes they can be a little dodgy about it, but I want people using the name. I'm not trying to set up any barriers for people to use the name.
So does that mean that they pay a licensing fee or something to use the concept? No, sorry. I don't know if I'm repeating myself in asking that question.
No, okay. They don't. So, and I knew that was, I knew that was a possibility going way back to when I started this, when I really had to be honest with myself of how much time am I willing to invest in this idea, knowing that that could be a possibility. And so for me, the vision of this has never really been to get this some sort of a direct return or some sort of a windfall directly for implementation of the Elam ending. For me, it's been just thinking about all the different indirect opportunities that might arise from being the originator of this concept. And so I think those are very real possibilities and exciting to think about what that might be. I think when it's all said and done, it's all going to be worth it that I did dedicate that time and energy to this idea.
I have this one question for you, Nick. I mean, it's a revolutionary idea and people take sports very seriously. Has anyone ever been like, come up to you and be like, you're ruining basketball? Have you ever had a late phone call late in the night? This is heavy breathing. Have you been met with resistance?
Nothing quite that dramatic, but occasionally, there'll be people, I wouldn't say ever to my face, but in emails or tweets or something, pretty bluntly voicing their disapproval. Now, sometimes it's not, it's kind of done in such a childish way that it's not even worth thinking about. But then in other ways, it's done in a thoughtful way. And for me, I never begrudge anyone for offering thoughtful criticism of the idea. And again, I have to bring myself back to when I first thought of this, is that I was very skeptical of this idea. And it took me a while to convince myself that the idea had merit. So I can't begrudge anyone else for disapproving of it. It's just that I think at this point, I'm not hearing any fresh arguments against it. If there is one, my eyes and ears are very open, and I'm very open-minded about this. And if you think about just TBT play, from the time this was implemented in 2017, every iteration of it, there's been some minor modification to it, which I always expected all along. I never thought the original version of the Elam ending would be the final version. At this point, I'm not really hearing very many fresh, I'm not really hearing any fresh new arguments against it.
One of the criticisms that I've heard of it is around the fact of statistical distortion. So we've got this record of player performance over a long period of time that we can look back on as a way of measuring quality or what have you. You're changing the rules, and that might have an impact on players' stats. Do you have a view on how meaningful that is?
Or any other flaws, Nick, that you've perceived?
Sure. So the, as far as the statistical record keeping, if we were to follow that that line of thinking, we would never have a shot clock. We would never have a 3-point shot. And the game would become stagnant. So, I think the game was always meant to evolve. I see this as just one of many evolutions of the game. I frame this a lot from the viewpoint of NBA play or American college basketball. That's kind of the lens I see things through. But in those levels of play, they change rules every year, big and small. And yet I think people just kind of understand that, well, you know, that means when we look at different records from different eras, we need to just take that into context, take that with a grain of salt. The best way I can say it is the way I really feel is that, you know, the stats work for the sport, not the other way around. You know, who works for who here? The stats work for the sport. You know, it's not the sport that should answer to the stats. Because if that's the way you're thinking, I think you've got it backwards. So, you know, you make rules that improve the fairness, the excitement, the safety, the marketability of your sport, and then you figure out all the statistical record keeping after that. And actually, I think basketball has really already moved in a direction that makes it very conducive to a tradition or to a transition from Elam ending. In that, you know, for many years we looked at things from a per game standpoint, per season, per minute on that sort of basis, where an Elam ending would kind of change that. But for years now, basketball is really, you know, people who are really influential in evaluating player performance, they look at things on a per possession basis. And you could just as easily analyze things from a per possession basis with the Elam ending as you could with the standard time format. In fact, I think the Elam ending actually brings a little bit more authenticity to those numbers, because, you know, you're not getting things so warped at the end of the game. You're not getting 5 or 10 or 15 minutes of extra play because of an overtime period. You're not racking up 10 points from the free throw line in a 30-second span, you know, all those sorts of things. So from a statistical standpoint, I think it is yet one more argument in favor of the Elam ending.
You know, it's funny when you say overtime. That's what I thought. A lot of people say, oh, they should implement in our league anyway with the NBL. They often go, oh, they should only bring in the Elam ending on overtime. And I think that's just arbitrary because, first of all, so few games go to overtime. And once you're in overtime, it's exciting. It's good product anyway when you're in overtime. The problem is that last couple of minutes of most games where they just trickle out with free throws. Question I have for you, Nick, and because I'm going to tag Larry Kesselman is the owner of the NBL, and the general manager is a guy by the name of Jeremy Loliga. I'll put you in touch with him as best I can. But let's say I clip up this bit, your answer to this question, and send it to him. You've been selling, by what I can hear, you've created this invention and the biggest part of your job has been in the selling of it, or in the, you know, approaching people and imparting the idea. If you had a minute with them now or whatever, how would you convince them? What would you say to them to convince them to implement it in the National Basketball League of Australia?
Sure. So what I always say is that Elam ending allows us to keep and enhance all the things that we already enjoy about late game play, and it allows us to eliminate or alleviate all the things that we don't enjoy. So it's really beneficial. And from any stakeholders' perspective, you know, I think it's a plus. The version that TBT implements, where you're just getting rid of the clock for the final stretch of the game, what I have noticed from being in the arena for many of those games is that when that clock is shut off, people get on their feet and they stay on their feet for the entire final stretch of the game. And that's something that we just don't see under the standard format very often, or not nearly as often as we'd like, where we have games that are very competitive. I mean, they're close games down the final stretch, that it's the most excruciating part of the game at the end. And I think it's such a shame. So it allows us to see the best basketball when the game is on the line. And so those are just a few of the things that really make me believe in this concept.
Perfect.
In your conversations selling this idea, do you find that there's a different take when you're talking to different groups of people? So administrators have a particular view, players have another, fans have another take on it. Do you find that it segments down into those particular groups with the views?
That's a great question. And I do think it does. From fans, a little more interested in tradition, or they might be interested in, you know, just the excitement of it. From a player perspective, you would need to think about things like safety and wear and tear, or just their own marketability, and which I think for them, I think they're the biggest beneficiaries of all, that you have their name is going to be, and their name and their image is going to be tied to all these game ending moments that they can really use to promote their brand. And,
totally.
from a league executive standpoint. I think it's a little more of a dollars and cents angle there. So, I think I absolutely do think that from all sorts of different stakeholders' perspectives, a few others we haven't mentioned, things like gamblers, things like coaches, things like referees,
broadcasters,
broadcasters.
It's so exciting in that last 4 minutes. Sorry to interrupt you there. Yeah.
I think it's a broadcaster's dream. I think it's a net benefit for every type of stakeholder there is in the game. I really do.
I mean, we just love it. We get made fun of on Twitter for being real big fans of this thing. To get a sense of you as a basketball fan, Nick, who's a player historically or even now that you would just love to have seen play under an Elam ending? Who you think would excel in an Elam ending?
Oh, I love this question. So, I think about really clutch performers. Someone like Kobe Bryant is known for being a clutch performer. I mean, obviously, I'd love to see Michael Jordan or LeBron James. But those are the easy answers. I think, I think a lot of people would have come up with those. I'll give a more general answer that I think I would like to see how big men would have a chance to shine more with the Elam ending, because under the time format, it becomes such a guard dominated game late in the game, where if you're ahead, you're always giving the ball to your point guard because they're going to be your best free throw shooter. If you're behind, you're giving the ball to your guards because they're the best 3-point shooters. And, big men don't get to play a big role in a lot of close games late in the game. So I would really like to see how some of the great big men throughout basketball history would have a chance to shine with the Elam ending.
I love that answer. And it actually feeds nicely into what was going to be a diversion in terms of a question, but it segues beautifully. What we're seeing now in all forms of basketball is it almost perhaps an over-reliance, but certainly the stats are saying shoot lots of 3-point shots. And I think some questions are starting to be asked as to whether that's making an attractive product. Since you've innovated in this area, do you have an innovation in terms of how that balance with 3-point shooting can be fixed or changed?
Yeah. And I do think it is something to be addressed. I love 3-point shots. I think they're great, but I think we've found that, the most efficient way to score, again, on that per possession basis or per shot basis, is to just shoot threes all the time. And to me, that's not exactly the kind of basketball that I would want to watch. So I would like to recalibrate somehow so that 2-point shots are more favorable or closer to as favorable as 3-point shots. So, I mean, there's the easy idea. You just move the 3-point line back. Certainly that's not an original idea, but I think it's worth considering. One idea I've heard, now I don't know if I love this idea, and I cannot take any credit for it because this is not an original idea at all. I still have to think about this. And again, I'm not endorsing it, but it's something to explore. Mm-hmm. In the 3-point line, it's an arc, and then it takes that sharp, angle turn toward the baseline, so that it creates enough room to take a 3-pointer from the corner. So one person proposed to me, just kind of in casual conversation, well, what if you just got rid of the corner three, where you think about the curvature of the arc, you just continue that curvature until it hits the sideline. And that would put, that they would intersect somewhere kind of far from the baseline. So there would not be any more corner 3-pointer anymore. Even if you're standing in the corner taking a shot, you'd still be inside the 3-point arc. So I don't know if I love it, but I'm obviously someone who's open to lots of interesting ideas, and it might be interesting to see how that would play out. But I guess that's a long way of saying that I don't know the perfect solution, but I do see it as a problem to be solved, this overabundance of 3-point shooting.
I've got a question that's a real departure, Nick, but am I right in saying you're in Muncie, Indiana at the minute? Is that where you are?
That is where I work, yes, and I live pretty close by, yeah.
You know, we're huge fans of the painter Bob Ross. Do you know he filmed in Muncing, Indiana?
I do know that very well.
Is that a famous fact? Yeah.
Yes, yes. Love Bob Ross's work. And yes, that's very exciting that, yes, that he filmed there. And a few other connections to Ball State University, where I work, is that David Letterman is probably their most famous alumnus. And also the creator of Garfield, the Garfield comic, Jim Davis, is a Ball State alumnus too.
I've got one thing for you. Going back to the name, we sort of spoke about this. We sort of spoke about this with the patent idea, but you know how it's called the Elam ending, which is obviously your surname in the ending. Was there ever thought to you calling it something like, clutch time ending, or so it's more, because obviously it's your surname. Have you ever thought about giving it a title that's more indicative of what the product is? You know what I mean? Like Crunch Time Timer. Or so, I'm coming up with horrible examples, but you know what I mean?
No, yeah. I hear what you're saying. The first name that I had for it in 2007 and for a few years after that was, I called it the Timeless Format. But that's a little bit of a misnomer because time is still a big element of the game all the way up until the final stretch of it. So it's a little bit misleading. Then beginning in 2013, I started proposing it under a very technical but on the nose name called the Hybrid Duration Format, that it was a hybrid of a timed and untimed play. But again, it doesn't exactly roll off the tongue. So yeah, it was actually working with TBT. They knew how important it was for me to be recognized for the idea.
Right.
And so, they were the ones who really came up with the idea to include my name in the concept title itself. So calling it the Elam ending. The other names, called the Fantastic Finish or something like that.
Beating something or other. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, so, there's other name, there's merit to that in some way, but again, I'd be a little worried that I'd be too easily pushed aside, I guess, or erased from basketball history. So I guess I like hearing that name repeated. It never gets old. And again, it's just, I think back to all the time and energy I put into it that, yeah. It would be bittersweet certainly if I just kind of became a footnote or
it's handy thing with your surname. Oh yeah, the good thing with your name is you go Andrew Elam, like it's unique. It's
surname. Yeah, it's great alliteration. You just need to change the A to the I, and then you've got the Elam ending.
Well, and for a time I did think about it possibly like calling it the eliminator rule because you're eliminating the clock and that might incorporate your name, but I don't know if that would work.
The Wonders with an O-N-E, the Beatles with a B.
There was someone who, now this is after the fact, someone kind of threw out the name the Nick of Time rule, which I thought, hey, that's not bad.
The Nick of Time. I'm writing that down. I like that.
You do have a great name to work with. I mean, if it was either of our names that was trying to be pushed into this, it wouldn't work. So at least Elam is kind of a cool surname and it works well with it.
Yeah. So, my really good friends, they kind of tease me a little bit about the name, but I'm a good sport about it. And again, it's exciting to see that has become or is becoming an actual part of basketball vocabulary.
I mean, we love it. And, we think it should be in our league. We saw the TBT and immediately fell for it. I just have to quickly ask you about your selling process of it or your explaining of it. Are you like a when you go to leagues or speak to people, do you have a PowerPoint presentation that you use or do you use any sort of visual learning? Cause you're a university lecturer and things. How do you sell it like that?
So I started with kind of a very dry white paper presentation, and I've changed different deliveries. It did eventually evolve into a PowerPoint presentation, and that's the one that was first embraced. So maybe that was the change that it needed. I think it's important to have lots of numbers to back it up, which I do, but also, you know, all the math that I do for this, it's pretty much at a high school level or below. So, I mean, I think it's very accessible, these arguments that I make with this idea. Just other parts of my messaging that I think are really important. I think it's always important to show that I'm, I guess, knowledgeable about the game, but not a know-it-all, because here I am reaching out to people who have invested their lives to the game, and they do know more about the game than I do. So to come off as a know-it-all would be an instant turnoff. So I try to avoid that. And also, I think I always need to make it very clear that I really love basketball. You know, because here I'm going to be spending some time talking about what I think needs to be fixed in the game. But I need to show up front that I really do love the game. I'm a big fan, and I think there's a way to make a great thing even greater. So those are just some of the parts of the message that I always try to include.
Yeah, to my way of thinking, ultimately, basketball, sport in general, it's an entertainment product. And to my way of thinking, this creates a more entertaining product, and people should be more willing to spend their hard-earned cash to go watch games in person, watch it on TV, what have you. I just think it makes it makes basketball a better thing to watch. And if you boil it all down, who doesn't want that?
Mm-hmm. And that, again, that takes me so far back to when I first thought of this, of why it was so exciting to me, why I thought it was something that I wanted to stick with and pursue, was that it was practical and cool. And that's when you know you've got just a great innovation, I guess. If it's practical and cool, then you're onto something. And I've always believed and still believe that the Elam Ending is just that.
Practical and cool. Andrew, I've gone through my list of questions. Do you have anything else?
I've gone through my list too. I just think, Nick, you're a real innovator. It's awesome to be able to come across people who are changing and innovating something, a sport that's been around for a long time now. It's been a real honor to talk to you. So thank you. Thank you for giving your time to us.
Thanks, Nick.
I had a blast, and it's always fun to really have a good extended conversation and take a deep dive in it. So I really enjoy this, and let's stay in touch. Let's get the Elam Ending in Australian basketball.
You know, we just had this NBL Cup. It's got 1 week left in it, which is a small in-season tournament, kind of like a Champions League created during COVID when all the teams had to come to one location. And we were big pushing. We're like, you got to put in the Elam Ending, you know, because it's this different thing that had come up this season. It didn't quite happen, but we're going to be in touch with the owners of the league for sure, with the Elam Ending. Absolutely. Thanks, Nick.
That's great. Thanks so much.
Follow Nick Elam on Twitter at Elam Ending. Follow this show at NBL Pocket Pod. And if you enjoy the show and want to support it via Patreon, do so via the link. Thanks very much, everyone. If you look in the description of this episode, there is all the information on how to buy a copy of Body Nodge's great handbook on the NBL. Marvelous. That's $30 a piece, as well as any other information you need about this show. Thanks for listening, everyone. A reminder, rate, review, subscribe if you feel the inclination. And thank you very much for listening. See you next time.